Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Hello, this is Abe Thompson with New Cyber Frontier, coming to you from the SecureSet Studios here in Colorado Springs. We have the privilege today of having Mr. John Waldman on board as our guest. He's the Executive Vice President for cybersecurity type issues, and also a partner at SBS Cybersecurity. You're in lovely Madison. And most importantly, John is a Denver Broncos fan, so you are most welcome to the program. How you doing, John?
I am excellent, Abe. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a delight and a privilege. So talk to us a little bit about how you kind of got to where you are and what drove you into our industry in the first place.
Well, it's a pretty interesting story and one that I think a lot of folks, you know, that have been in the field about 15 years, maybe even can relate to. So back in the early 2000s, I was going to school and wasn't sure what I was going to be when I grew up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, did 5 good years at Dakota State University here in Madison, South Dakota, and was walking away with a degree in computer information systems, meaning I could go program or I could go do network administration stuff. And nobody was hiring network admins in 2004. And I didn't really want to go program COBOL for an insurance company. So I was blessed with the opportunity to go into Dakota State University's very first Masters of Science in Information Assurance.
Okay.
And lo and behold, some financial institutions around that time approached Dakota State University with a unique problem. They said, hey, we're getting audited and regulated on this IT stuff, and we don't have any idea how to fix it. Can you guys at Dakota State University, you know, help us out a little bit? And we said, well, you know, maybe we can try to help solve those problems. So some college kids got together and tried to figure out how we can figure out risk assessment and IT audit, you know, on the side a little bit. And lo and behold, a couple of years later, we started a business, you know, and here we are about 15 years later, 70 employees, work in 49 out of the 50 states and just do good security things for not just financial institutions, but businesses of all types today. So it's been a pretty crazy and fun ride.
So it isn't just frat parties and football games when college kids get together. I like the sound of this.
Absolutely. Solving like the problems.
Indeed. Well, and of course, auditing, you know, on its face has that connotation, but what a critical segment of the industry it's become. What type of niche have you been able to build in those 49 states? Or are you just across all industries?
Well, the vast majority of work that we do is in the financial industry. So mostly banks, some credit unions, but really just what we do here at SBS is really help folks understand risk.
Sure.
So no matter what, everybody's got important stuff and everybody has, you know, IT assets and information systems that have value. And we help folks really understand what's going on there, how to mitigate some of that risk, and then test things on the back end and make sure that they're doing the things that they say they're doing and that it's enough to protect their information.
Sure. Do you go sort of even beyond sort of the initial advice, awareness, and mitigation steps to provide sort of a longer-term solution for some of these folks?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what my consulting team actually does is we work with folks on an ongoing basis, whether it's weekly, bi-monthly or monthly, to really partner with an organization, whether it's a financial institution or a manufacturing company or a government agency or whatever the case is. And we really bring the training, the education, the framework to really handle risk management for folks from a governance perspective, from a technical implementation perspective, to really get down to helping our clients make better decisions on what they should do next. So.
And so for you, certainly RMF are not three unintelligible letters. They certainly have a lot of importance, I would presume.
Absolutely.
Definitely, definitely good stuff. While we have a moment here, let's take a quick break and go hear from our sponsor.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
And we're back with New Cyber Frontier. My name is Abe Thompson. We have on the program John Waldman, who's one of the executive vice presidents and SBS Cybersecurity and a partner therein. We were just talking about how you're bringing not only awareness and sort of risk mitigation, but even some longer term solutions to the companies that you help, primarily in the financial sector. Would you agree that and some of the things I've heard is that a lot of people give the financial sector some credit for being the early adopters of some of the importances of cybersecurity. Does that ring true with what you've seen?
Yeah, I think that they would maybe coin a different term than early adopters, like getting beat up a whole lot by the regulators. But we talk a lot that there's a silver lining to having 15 years of regulatory examination experience in that they are prepared much more so than many small businesses to handle these types of threats and attacks, especially today where most attacks are automated.
Sure, sure. With fiduciary responsibility, and you know, that's where you move beyond just policy auditing. We're talking about, you know, regulation and law. What does it take, and what has it taken for you to build that compendium of legal understanding to really supplement the work that you do in compliance?
Passion, man.
Yeah.
You know, like, you've got to be passionate about learning, not just the legal language, but different regulatory frameworks, different risk management frameworks, you know, anything from NIST cybersecurity framework to the FFIEC IT handbooks to COBIT to, you know, CIS top 20, you name it, man. There's a lot of reading and a lot of passion for learning involved so that you can talk the talk with clients and really help take them from a starting point to, you know, moving towards security, because in the world of cybersecurity, there's no destination. It's the journey the whole way, man.
Yeah, there's no letting up. In a previous program, I'd had a great conversation with a gentleman who's got some background in organizational psychology and some behavior and things of that nature. And he talked about some interesting stages that you go through with folks trying to convince them of their need to comply, let alone adopt some cybersecurity principles, like ignorance, and then when they're made aware, it's sort of a shame, and then shame kind of turns to fear. Would you say that you've gone through some of the same sort of steps with folks trying to get them both concerned and then in a position to make changes?
100%. Okay. You know, cybersecurity is fundamentally a human thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's all of that you were talking about, training, education, awareness, buy-in, but it's also the people that implement the technology. The technology is not necessarily the flaw. It's how we implement technology and how we maintain technology.
Sure.
But 100%, that's absolutely right. You know, one of the things that I'm super passionate about and we really try to help our folks understand is today, almost everybody's a technology business.
Yeah.
You know,
they better be.
Exactly. Yeah. And I just had this conversation with a banker friend of mine this morning, you know, and I told him, hey, you know that you guys are a technology business that does banking to serve customers, right?
Sure,
and
sure.
He stopped to think about it. So I said, all right, well, think about it this way. When's the last time that you helped a customer without the use of technology? Or if your technology went away, like if all your technology was shut down, could you guys still do business tomorrow? Hmm. And you know, the answers to those kind of ring true for most folks.
Sure.
We're so reliant on our technology and the internet to just do business that it's beyond an expense. It's beyond a cost of doing business. It's an advantage for most folks to reach their customers and serve folks better.
How do you tear down those first walls of insecurity or defensiveness as you're really trying to help folks and you know, developing your client base?
It's really one of the first steps is helping folks understand the importance of what they have.
Yeah.
Right. So one of the things, especially from small businesses that we hear we're a small business in the middle of South Dakota. Nobody knows who we are. We don't have anything that anybody wants. And those are just, they're unfortunately incorrect assumptions that folks are making, and sometimes an excuse for not protecting the stuff that they do have, because everybody has something of value. Everybody has something that's important. You just have to figure out what it is and why it's important to you. And also, you know, Boris the Ukrainian hacker guy, he's my mascot for, you know, bad actors. You know, why would Boris the Ukrainian hacker guy want what you have?
Sure.
And if your customers on the internet can see what you have, so can Boris.
And to a greater degree and with a whole different motivation, for sure.
You know,
we have quite a few here in Colorado Springs, quite a few very big name nonprofit organizations. And I've actually been pleasantly surprised how fairly robust, you know, their cybersecurity approach is. And I'm sure a lot of that comes, again, from the fiduciary side of all that donor information and having that nonprofit status. So you kind of, you know, tear down some of those walls and build an understanding of what they have and how it needs to be protected. What has been the secret to that kind of massive footprint you've now got in 49 states? That's really cool.
Part of it's a lot of training and education. You know, I mentioned earlier that we're super passionate about helping folks really understand the risk. So we have a wing of our organization, a department called our SBS Institute that my other partner, Chad Knutson, leads. And so he, for the most part, and I and some other individuals here go around and we do a lot of speaking and training and education. We have 11 certification programs through which I couldn't tell you off the top of my head how many financial employees have gone through those training programs. I know it's in the thousands. So, you know, we provide the tools and the training, the education, the framework for folks to really do a lot of this stuff themselves. And then they seek us out knowing that this is what we do and this is all we do. We're not an accounting firm that's dabbling in IT audit or cybersecurity stuff. You know, cybersecurity is what we live and that's our passion. So our brand and our reputation and our passion for helping other folks has really, I think, you know, shown through in the last 15 years.
What's been the pathway to getting some of those certifications recognized as industry standards in those various areas?
Sure. We have, since they're mostly financial institution specific certifications, we've partnered with a lot of state banking financial associations, right? So state banking associations, like in South Dakota, we've got the South Dakota Bankers Association and the Independent Community Bankers of South Dakota. That's just one example. We've got, I think, 30 or 30 plus state banking association partnerships that help us promote the certifications in those states and help us, you know, schedule some on-site. So we do some on-site training and education for folks, as well as online certifications.
So if folks are out there, and I know, you know, listeners are hearing this, and a lot of those are from kind of those mom and pop smaller businesses, like you said, and fortunately some of them have begun to wise up. How do they look for a solid auditor? What are the things you would recommend that they have on their checklist as they're looking for someone that can really help them be substantive?
Great question. Number one, my number one thing that I would tell you, if you're looking for somebody to come in and assess your organization or help you get started, number one thing is to find somebody that's willing to partner with you, that is willing to get to know your organization, what you do, what you have, how you handle your business, so that they can find the right fit of things that are right for you. So there's a lot of companies out there that'll come in and impose their 200 or 300 checklist items, right? And say, you need to do here, start with one and go to 200. And for some organizations, that's okay. But the best method that I've seen, you know, outside of even just us at SBS, is for somebody to come in, get to know your organization, and then build out a plan, because not everybody's going to be on the same timeline as well. But build out a plan to improve over time. You're not going to go from 1 to 200 on the checklist tomorrow or in 6 weeks or even in 6 months in a lot of cases. So how do you get there, and how do you continuously improve over time?
Sure enough. Let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsor.
Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
And we're back with New Cyber Frontier. My name is Abe Thompson, coming to you from the SecureSet Studios here in Colorado Springs. I have with us today Mr. John Waldman. He's the Executive Vice President and a partner at SBS Cybersecurity. And you were kind of taking us through some of the ideal things to look for these folks that want a reputable auditing entity. And you talked about someone that's willing to, tailor. You know, someone that's willing to get to know you. And, you know, a lot of times we talk about how relationships are key. You know, that would certainly get my attention if someone came to me with that approach. What else? What else am I looking for?
I think, you know, just an approach that the business owner and the shareholders, you know, involved in the process can really understand and agree upon. So, you know, as opposed to here's the 200 things that you need to do, period, end of story. Yeah. There's always one of the approaches that we take is everything has risk, right? There's risk in you or I getting in the car and leaving in our offices and driving home. We're going to jump in a ton and a half of metal and rubber and hurtle ourselves down, you know, asphalt with a whole bunch of other yahoos out there. There's risk there. But why do we do it? Because it sure beats walking, right?
Yeah.
So there's risk in everything that we do, but really understanding how important the thing is, what the risk is, and knowing that there's always a way to mitigate the risk. There's a million different ways to skin the cat. You got to find the way that works for your organization, because it could be, you know, doing a vulnerability assessment, but it also could be doing a web application scan or, you know, implementing strong passwords or a password manager. There's many different ways to mitigate risk and different compensating controls.
Well, I love that you say there's always a way to mitigate risk, because one of the things we've been accused of in our industry is, you know, kind of leveraging fear and just, you know, selling simply the fear. And so I love the more relatable and human approach that there's a way to mitigate this stuff, and let's tackle it together. Love that. What other things have you had success with in terms of, you know, bringing in customers?
Absolutely. So the other is to not just, provide a deliverable and then move on to the next client and shut the door,
sure.
Right? Continue to be a resource for your clients, knowing that, hope, you know, and hoping that they'll come back, but
sure,
knowing that, you know, you're always available to help. You know, I mentioned that we're passionate about helping folks and getting them to really understand the risk. Part of that is helping them understand a separate question that they might have 3 months from now.
Sure.
So, you know, just continuing to be a resource, provide value, you know, in today's world, put out good content, you know, or consume good content of others in the security field to understand kind of the news and how you address some of the major vulnerabilities and things that are going on that you hear all the time.
And keeping your finger on the pulse for sure.
Yep.
You know, most of us in that have been around cybersecurity for a while know very well what it means to have passion for this industry. And you talked about that. And we know it's essential because there are times when it's not as lively and fun, particularly when you're auditing and going through things. Tell us sort of where was that manufactured for you? And then what does that look like? Because I also want to be able to identify that passion in someone like, you know, in an industry professional and then cultivate that.
Oh, good question. So I'm just a continuous learner, you know. We do an interesting thing here at SBS with our employees. We do a personality profile for all of our folks so that we can better understand one another. And, you know, perhaps you're familiar with a lot of those things, but that's kind of one of the number one things of my personality is I want as much information as possible.
Sure.
So I have a passion for learning. I love finding out why things work and how things work and being able to relate that to clients and impart that upon the folks that work here. You know, that can be really contagious for a lot of folks. And you know as well as I do that there is no shortage of learning that you can do in the world of cybersecurity because you might think you know how the universe works, but just give it 30 seconds and it'll get turned on its head.
Sure. That's something that's unique to think about in terms of how our personality impacts and others, but it makes, you know, crystal clear sense mm-hmm. when you think about how to relate to customers and others. And so in the auditing realm, how do you all stay current? You know, you talked about keeping the pulse. How do you stay current? What are some of your good sources of data in terms of the places that you go to keep up to speed?
You bet. So we have a number of different, you know, not really subscriptions, but websites that we and I in particular check out on a very regular basis. You know, everybody in the security world knows Brian Krebs, for example. I read on a daily basis Bleeping Computer, the Hacker News. There's a company out in California called the Citadel Information Group. They put out a blog once a week on Sundays that I help or use to help source my newsletter, but there's a really good source that was Citadel Information Group, I believe. I put out my own super secret internal sort of sometimes for customers
sure.
newsletter. So if anybody's checking that out, you can shoot me an email and I'll add you to my super secret
sure.
newsletter. But training and education, you know, we go, especially the folks that present for us, go to conferences, present on stuff, talk to our customers, really try to understand what, not just, you know, the things that you read in the news about the latest vulnerability, but, you know, what are the big concerns for our clients?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the financial industry, it's incident response and vendor management are the top two concerns for folks. You know, how do we make sure that the folks to whom we're outsourcing our data, our processing, are really protecting us and our information? How do we really know today outside of them just sending us some reports that are rubber stamped and it says SOC 2 on it? You know, how do we really know? So asking good questions there. On the incident response side of the world, it's, you know, the big question that we always ask is, hey, if somebody was in your network, would you know? And that's kind of a life-changing moment for a lot of folks when somebody asks you that and you're like, Yeah, I don't. I don't know if we would know. And that's why you see the statistics out there that say, you know, bad guys are typically in a network for 200 some days before discovery, if not more than that.
Sure.
So how do you get to that point of really just listening to the customers and helping them really solve those challenges in a way that makes sense for them?
Indeed. Now, certainly in your 15 years, you have probably seen some doozies. What are some particular just real winners that you've come across in some of your audits over the years?
Well, you hear and see stories, and everybody takes a different approach to regulatory frameworks and you know, oversight, right?
Yeah.
So we've run the gamut from large customers that are absolutely incredible and we can help supplement what they do, the small clients who've got one or two really smart folks. But in a lot of cases, you know, for small clients in small town USA, they have a hard time finding good resources that can really help. Or you know, I mean, just even keeping those resources in rural America for the long term when the cybersecurity market is what it is today. So we've run into folks that are about ready to get shut down from a regulatory perspective because they've ignored their IT regulators for the last 5 years.
Wow.
You know, so you have a hard time defending that kind of thing. You know, we recently worked with a business that was just about shut down by ransomware. And, you know, it was a really touch and go situation, but we were able to help them recover and restore their business. And, you know, they had downtime, but, you know, it's really impactful to be there in a moment or at least watch as a business is really just holding its life by a thread. And, you know, to see the importance of that, that's why we talk about, you know, these folks are technology companies because, you know, if you're that close to your technology going away and losing a year worth of customer data and trade industry secrets, you know, it's pretty tenuous.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. That's a difficult place to be. And certainly almost a very, probably an emotional place too, when someone's that close to shut down and then having to respond. And then, what have you been successful in doing to help people then change their behaviors for the long term? Because it's one thing to come in and fix something, but then, you know, how do you know when you've reached a level where you know they're going to stick with it? What has been successful there?
Where success lives is in a top-down approach,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So you getting the top level of the organization to really buy in to the importance of this stuff. They don't have to be as passionate as we are, for example, you know, and they don't even have to have somebody at the organization as passionate as we are, but to really understand the importance and the impact that this stuff can have, you know, hopefully it's outside of, you know, almost getting shut down by regulators or almost getting shut down by a cyber attack. Hopefully you're able to have an impact on the top of the level of the organization to really help them understand this stuff is really important and our business depends on this stuff. So let's continue to invest in it, even if it's just taking, you know, some steps over time. But we tell folks at that are our clients, you know, buy-in has to start at the top, and the board of directors and the senior management at any organization has to participate in all of the other things. You know, one of the things that we do is social engineering training or security awareness training and social engineering testing, right? So train the people and test the people. But if the top level of the organization says, hey, this is important, you guys all need to do that, but we're not going to be involved, you know, that's sending the wrong message to your employees. That's saying, well, it's important, but not important enough for us to worry about.
Especially if those top level folks are the more susceptible to insider threat.
That as well.
Yeah.
Or clicking on stuff.
Yeah.
So it's really creating a culture that this stuff is important and that it's everybody's responsibility to help out with. That'll set folks up for a long-term success.
Sure. So next steps for those small businesses are out there. What words would you give them to encourage them to kind of get on track?
Start.
Yeah, there you go.
Just, that's what I tell a lot of folks, just start. It doesn't really matter where you start, just start, because it's not going to be perfect tomorrow. Yeah. But if you take one step, no matter what step it is, if it's training and education, if it's looking into implementing a new security control, if it's bumping up your passwords a little bit, if it's implementing a password manager, if it's inventorying what you have and understanding how your users are interacting with the internet on a regular basis. Because it's not like it was 15 years ago when you and I installed all of the stuff that we need to install on our computer, and that's where it lived within our four walls of our business. You know, the perimeter of our networks have expanded to basically just include the internet today.
Yeah.
So just knowing what you have and what your users do and incrementally increasing security one day, one week, one month, one year at a time, one step at a time is where we tell folks to start. You know, if you're a financial institution, there's a ton of good regulatory guidance within the FFIEC IT handbooks for state and federal organizations or subcontractors. You know, NIST has a number of great standards, whether it's the NIST cybersecurity framework or a lot of federal subcontractors, especially those working with the Department of Defense, are subject to NIST 800-171. So we've been doing a lot of work in that space lately. So just, you know, making improvements over time is really the name of the game, because you're never going to be 100%. There's no such thing as 100% secure. Yeah. You can get that much closer all the time.
Risk mitigation. Well, you've heard it here, folks. There is such thing as a passionate auditor. he's got a lively personality, cares about interaction with his clients to the core, and he's given some great guidance. We just need to get started and get things right. John, it's been a delight to have you on the program. Thanks for spending the time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it a ton.
Indeed. It's been my pleasure. This has been New Cyber Frontier. My name is Abe Thompson, coming to you from the SecureSet Studios here in Colorado Springs. Good day.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember, please follow and participate as New Cyber Frontier is supporting a grassroots community effort to empower the individual in the digital age. Check it out at privacyforthepeople.org. Also, make sure to join our mailing list so we can keep you informed. If you have an idea, if you have a question you would like to hear answered, or if you just want to get involved in what we're doing, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, because they are the ones that really make this show possible. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.